Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneurial life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Gino and Julia show. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
It's actually the Julia and Gino show. It's not the Gino.
We've had this discussion with all our kids. Everyone, me and all the girls decided that it's Gino and Julia.
So I had no vote in it.
It's more proper.
I am outnumbered, but still, I'm the one who pays the bills.
He didn't care at all. He's like, what? Are you on a podcast?
So everyone, welcome to the Julia and Gino show. My name is Gino Barbaro, and today's guest is Candy McVicker, a grief and trauma specialist who serves as founder and executive director of the Missing Grace Foundation. She's also co-author, holding it up right here, everybody, of Holding On to Love After You Lost a Baby, walking couples through their marriage and providing encouragement during the grieving process. Please welcome to the show, Candy.
Hello, hey, Candy. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to our time together today.
First question for me.
Okay.
What is your life's work, Candy? Before we get into the book and everything, what is your life's work?
That's a big question.
Go big or go home is what I've been told. So I'm going big.
Yeah. Well, I want to honor my daddy in heaven with my life. I want it to be something beautiful. And I just believe that hope is always possible. I'm a very hopeful person. If you give me something hopeless, I'll figure out a way to find hope in the situation. And so I want to try to be a light for Christ and to be hope to the people around me. And I pray that what I live my life like and how I interact with people will point people to him, and hopefully they'll discover a relationship with the Lord.
Can you share with the listeners why you wrote the book, your story about losing your baby, and then what inspired you to write the book?
Yeah. You know, I said I'd never write a book. I didn't want to write a book. So that's only the Lord. I wasn't one of those people who said, oh, I'm going to write a book someday. I'm going to be an author. No, it was about 200 people who told me, Candy, you're going to write a book. You have a book in you. And the amazing thing is I was just caught by surprise. The Lord is so funny. I think he has an awesome sense of humor. And I was at a wonderful marriage conference with my husband in the Bahamas. Every year we would go on something that was a marriage enrichment type of situation for our marriage. And this was a wonderful conference. And it turned out that Dr. Chapman was speaking at the conference, and I had read that love language book and had been already applying it and working to incorporate that into our marriage. And it had been life altering for us. And the Lord had me connect with him in a really miraculous way. And he said, we're going to write this book together, you and I. And he said, here's my number, call. And then a week later, I see his number. He called me and he said, it's all approved. And we're going to go forward with it because it's a very important and a very needed book. And your story needs to be shared. And this topic needs to be discussed. So that was how that began. So, but what preceded that, I was a woman who wanted to be a mom with a quiver full. I love babies. I love children. I wanted a bunch of them, both naturally and through adoption. And I was really excited when we got pregnant. I didn't know if it would happen quickly or take a long time. And then the difficult pregnancy ensued. I had a very troubling pregnancy with hyperemesis and lost a ton of weight because I couldn't stop throwing up. I was very sick and I did not feel good. But I had all the hope in the world that everything was going to be okay. We were going to have this precious baby, and we didn't find out if a boy or girl till the birth. But we started to notice decreased fetal movement in the last few weeks. And I hadn't been pregnant before, and I was calling friends and they're like, oh, it's probably nothing, you know, and everybody kind of minimized my concerns. Mm-hmm. And then when I would go into the clinic, I went in 6 times in the last 2 weeks before giving birth. And I say, the baby doesn't move, something's not right. And they're like, oh, you're just a worried first time mom, baby slowed down in the finish it, you know, towards the end, and it's fine. And they would put on a Doppler and try to find a heart tone. And then they would listen. And then they would say, oh, there it is. And by the 7th visit, you know, I'd been asking, can I please have an ultrasound? And they said, no, that's not necessary. We don't need to do that. We're not going to approve that. And now on the 7th visit, it was an ultrasound that I was given the opportunity to finally have. And so we went in there, and it was a tragic day for us. It was kind of a point in my life where all time stopped, and the tech left the room without talking to us. It was very awkward and uncomfortable. And then the radiologist came back in, and I'll never forget the moment because it was so traumatizing. And she said, proceed with the ultrasound. And she put the Doppler back on and began to look. And I didn't know ultrasounds at that point. You know, this was only my second one, and the other one at 20 weeks was not that fun either. They were not being very nice to us while we were having it. And you didn't drink enough water. And it was really a tough ultrasound. So this is only my second one in my life. And she says, well, as you can see, we are looking at the heart chamber. There is no heartbeat and it is dead. I'm sorry. And turned around and left. And it was just that. I still couldn't understand, what did she just say? I don't understand what she said. And the tech just turned off the machine, put, you know, a towel over to wipe off the gel off my belly. And she said, you need to go to the hospital now and take care of it. And I said, take care of, what do you mean? And she goes, well, it's dead and you're going to go deliver it. And it was that cold and callous. And so, you know, when we ended up at the hospital, I was shaking, I was terrified. I hadn't finished my birthing classes. I didn't know how to do this. And I was really afraid. And I went through 24 hours of very intense labor. I did not take medication because I was terrified that I wouldn't get the miracle of her still being born alive. Because we were praying, we had put the prayer warrior line out. We were asking everyone, please pray that God will turn this around. And then, you know, maybe that's their diagnosis, but I pray we have a different, you know, outcome. And so I just was really hopeful that she would end up being born alive. And, the drugs, I felt like that might cause her not to be able to thrive, or something would be wrong. And so anyway, we delivered a perfectly healthy, beautiful baby girl, but it was evident at the birth, she had an umbilical cord issue and she had needed an early delivery with a cesarean to be able to survive. Mm. And so we did not name her until that moment because we didn't know boy or girl. And we had this whole list of names all picked out, of course, and none of them fit for that situation. And so I just looked at my husband and I said, I feel like the Lord's telling us her name should be Grace. And he said, that's perfect.
That's how it works in your household too. You choose all the names, because I didn't get to choose any of the names. There's six right. kids and not I, one.
Okay. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
They all have great names.
I'm not saying she didn't, but it's a beautiful name.
So we held her. We loved her. Mm. We are so thankful. We had time with her. We have beautiful, you know, some pictures. But because I had such a terrible experience all through that process, it made me feel this vigilance and this, you know, fight in me to help make sure others never had to go through the kind of traumatic things I had to go through throughout the process. And so, we just began building this nonprofit that helped people all throughout the world, really, to help them with grieving and understanding how to get through. And so my story is in the book, but it's really about how to be able to get through this well, and how to have your marriage still thrive, which mine has, thank the Lord. And there's a lot of hope in this book. There's a lot of good messages in this book, and it's very, you know, heavy on the resource tools of how do you process, how do you heal, what can you do, and how do you help somebody who's going through this so that you can be a good friend to them.
Wow. It's a beautiful story of faith and marriage, even though there's a tragic situation that happened. But it's interesting how that, you know, you've gone through something so horrible, but at the same time, you have a whole book and a whole program of helping other women. And I think that God works like that. And it's beautiful and it's amazing. We know many people, as you do, who've lost a child, and it's devastating, of course. And how do you, it's different, men and women, we grieve differently, husband and wives, mothers and fathers. And like you mentioned the marriage, talk about marriage and after the loss of a child, like what goes on, what advice can we know about? Because we all know somebody, we can all give them a hand. you know, we can give them advice or maybe someone to talk to. So give us some information on that.
You know, there's some things that are norms, if you will, that we can kind of count on as far as how men typically grieve and how women typically grieve. Yes, there's always going to be exceptions to that, but I'm going to speak to the norms that I see after working with bereaved parents for 20 years and facilitating support groups and speaking with thousands of them on the phone and online and in person. Typically, women are very emotive. We process externally. We talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk about it. And we perseverate on these thoughts. And our way to heal is to externalize and to discuss it. And we sit with the lady friends and we talk. But we also want to do that with our husbands who aren't as talkative in that way and don't have as many words to express about that subject. And they get very stressed out by are talking with them because their nature is, well, then at the end of this discussion, what am I going to do to fix it? What am I going to do to solve the problem? How am I going to make it better? And the problem in that communication line is the man will not be able to fix it, make it better, or solve it. It's not going to happen because this tragedy is already upon us. We are already now in the process of healing. And so we have to understand and give grace to men that they're wired differently for how they're going to process pain and process their emotions through grief of a child. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't emote and they can't talk and have instances of that, but it's more in shorter bursts and it tends to be kind of like in a box. And so the man is able to go off to work and literally put it on the shelf, on the box. Now that box is precious to him and he cares about that box. It's not that he's disregarding all of what happened, but right now he's got to be provider and he's in provider mode and he's going to take good care of his family and he's going to do a good job of that by being a hard worker. And then when, you know, he's doing things for you, he's going to do a really good job at those things around the house for you. And, you know, and if he's, you know, saying things, he's saying them with the most kind, loving words he knows how to in the situation. But it tends to be that women start to feel their husbands failing them in emotional attachment through the grieving process. And she wants him to be in the same place emotionally as she is throughout the process. And God did not wire us to be on the same page throughout all of that. We tend to sharpen each other. We tend to be strong when the other is weak and weak when the other is strong, and we balance each other. And so I love to give couples permission to be okay with who they were made to be and how they process things, but also give them an opportunity to try something different for a moment. So for example, in a counseling session, we would say, or in a support group, you know, right now she needs this from you. So for this moment, give that to her, but then to the woman say, now don't require him to give that amount of attention to that and the intensity to that every day. Find that from your support girlfriends and through your other outlets and your counselor and your pastor and what have you. And so, in the love languages, I'll just like to touch on that. So there's five love languages, and Dr. Gary Chapman, after many years of counseling, he was able to discover that we tend to love people the way we want to be loved. And that there tends to be five basic ways that we love people. And so we have words of affirmation, meaning you will love people with loving words and how you write them and you speak them. And there is quality time. And that is where you give your love with your time. Your time is very valuable to you. So you're going to love people with your time and being very present to them and doing things with them. And then we have receiving gifts, and that's going to be you're very thoughtful in your gift giving. It's going to be something that makes somebody feel really special. And you love to give gifts that way. And then acts of service, you're going to do for people all the things that you feel will be a blessing and helpful to them. You just love to serve people. And then the final one is physical touch. And so that is both just loving hand holding and, you know, rubbing your hand on someone's shoulder, a big hug, all the way to the intimate touch that a couple has in marriage. Now, I didn't know about any of that. And in the midst of my grieving, I was struggling in my marriage because we lost our buffer. Mm-hmm. Okay. So grief tends to rub you raw. And so now, instead of a gracious response when you're frustrated with each other, it's an agitated, irritated response. And the tone changes and you can start to be very like to each other. And all of a sudden you're not as gracious. And maybe you don't even feel like being intimate because, you know, that's where this all started. And and there's just all these things wrapped up into your vulnerability. You feel vulnerable and raw. And so now you turn on this very precious person who's the person who should be your safe person because you feel like they can handle it, right? But now you've done withdrawal. The bank account's empty and there's nothing in there. And so you got to make some deposits. So the love languages is a way to fill that deposit, put more in than you've taken out, and to fill this person's love tank that's literally empty. They don't feel loved by you. And so I've figured out I'm acts of service is my top one. And you tend to have a secondary, and mine's quality time. My husband's, of course, and this is common in a marriage, word opposite. So his top love language is words of affirmation, and his second runner up would be physical touch. So two totally different things. We're both trying to love each other and neither of us is feeling loved. It wasn't that the love wasn't real. It wasn't that the love wasn't good. It just wasn't received very well. And when you're already raw, you're just, you know, it's very easy to start to think maybe we're not compatible. Maybe we just can't do this. This is just too hard. And so you need tools in your toolbox to help with your marriage. And throughout our marriage life, there's going to be different tools that work better at different seasons. But this is one of these tools that's just like, you always need a screwdriver. Like, you know, there's always something that has loosened and that needs to be tightened. And this is one of those good ones. Mm-hmm. And so I highly recommend people get the books, and, you know, there's a million of them out there of all these awesome books that Dr. Chapman has written on the love languages for your kids, your teenagers. Mm-hmm. But this one, if you want to help anyone who's ever been through grief, okay. And just statistically, we know one in every four pregnancies ends in miscarriage. One in six couples in America is infertile. We're dealing with a lot of trauma and grief out there. People who've died with COVID, what have you. There's so many things. And so you're going to encounter people in your circle of life and in your sphere of influence that are grieving. And so let's just do it better and have an extra tool in our toolbox to help us do it well. So to give an example, when my husband and I learned this, he's like, oh, I'm trying to love you by saying nice things. He's like, you're an amazing mom and I just love you. And I was like, yada, yada, yada. You know, like, his words were like cheap, like, oh yeah, so whatever, you know. And he was like horrified, like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to tell you how much I love you and you're not receiving it. He texts me all these loving messages and write me loving notes. And I was like, okay, thank you. And I mean, how terrible is that, right? Yeah. But I was like, do something for me, right? You know, show me your love.
Show me the money is what you're telling me, right?
And then, you know, he wants a lot more physical attention and I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling, you know, lumpy and I feel gross. And I'm just like, I don't feel very like into that right now. And he's just like, I don't care. You don't even have to do that. Just touch me. Like rub your hand against my back as you walk past me in the kitchen, you know? So I had to figure out how to change the way I was loving him. I'm like, well, you have a perfectly clean house. You know, I've done a great job around here. I've made you a gorgeous meal. Like, come on, you know, I gave you my time. And so anyway, so then little by little, it was like, okay, I'm just going to be more present and I'm going to give you the love languages the way you need. And all of a sudden I just saw he started to come into grief with me more. And then he would ask me, how can I love you well and our daughter well in grief? And I said, well, if you'll serve with me in ministry and if you will say her name and you will spend time loving her. And he's like, how do I love a baby that I don't have in my arms? Like, how can I love her well? And I said, one, love her well by who you are for the Lord. Love her well by what you do out in the world to honor her and help me create a legacy for her. I want to do that in partnership. And when he got that, man, it was like,
You're asking a lot for this man, though. I'm telling you, he must be a great husband because you got a long list. All he wanted was a little pat on the back, and that's it. Yeah. You've got this laundry list.
Potential. She knew his potential. Right. I feel like we know our men's potential. We want the best.
Yes, and his potential is, it's up there. Yes. He's awesome. Yeah. I love my husband. So, yes, he figured out that stuff, and it's been good. And you guys can have the spark back in your marriage. I swear you can do it.
I would challenge everybody when you have to finish listening to this. We have Dr. Chapman's podcast on the multifamily zone. We did it several months ago. Go back and listen to them because Dr. Chapman still today is probably vacuuming his room and emptying the dishwasher because that's his love line. Exactly. You know,
it's a great podcast because my husband really, he calls himself some funny things. And I think all the men out there get a good laugh by listening to that one. So definitely.
How can friends and family help the grieving process?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because we were talking before the show and it's uncomfortable. Like when someone loses a baby or even a family member, we're so uncomfortable. Most of the times we're just like, we're sorry for that. And we go the other way.
Words of affirmation, Julia, that was an amazing question. Thanks for that question.
Thank you, my love. Candy. That's awesome. Well, that's not my love language. Just so you know. Okay. That's where the disconnect is. Well, we have to do the course.
It's the quality time, but it's my quality time. Julia, you want to go for a walk? We'll spend some time going for a walk on the beach, but I don't want to walk on the beach. I just want to sit on the couch. But that's not really quality time. I'm not a couch potato. That's your couch potato. Yeah. So
sorry.
We have an interesting twist on the five love languages, but yeah.
It's his stubbornness that gets in the way, but we'll talk about that next time.
Okay, you're a work in progress. We're still working on you.
I'm just a clay. You got to mold me. You got to mold me a little bit better. But really, seriously, how can friends help the grieving process? Because in the book, people say some very callous things and they don't mean to. Oh, the baby's not alive. It was never really around. And I think people should be really self-aware of what they say.
Well, that's a good question for what you're asking because how do you handle the wrong statement from other people? Because some people say some wrong, they don't mean it, but how do you handle that? And how do you help other people? That's a great question.
Well, our words have power. And that's a very important part of that right there.
Yep.
And to contemplate the effect of what you're about to say, I really believe in the pause before the word. Like you're about to walk up to a friend's house who's lost a child. You've got to have some thought process in that drive over, you know, and you're about to write a letter and send condolences, or, you know, it's the 1 year anniversary and you're thinking about them and you're going to see them at church. You know, it takes some, just a little bit of time to think, what would I want to hear? What would help me? What would feel good? What would be lasting in my mind, you know, as, wow, I'll never forget the moment they said that. That really was special, versus something you just say flippantly. And what we do in our awkwardness and being uncomfortable around this subject is we quickly rattle off things that we've heard, right? Because we are affected by our culture. And in our society, we, you know, grief is minimized, it's trivialized, it's shoved under the rug. Mm-hmm. And so if you've grown up, every time you heard something related to grief, that was the response, you tend to just regurgitate that without ever thinking what that would feel like to be said. You know, somebody said something to me once, and I remember saying, I was so horrified at what they said. And I said, if I said those words to you after your husband died, would you have found it helpful? And she said, oh, dear God, oh, my word, I'm so sorry. I didn't even think about what I said. And so give pause before you say something. And we have lists upon lists in here of what to say, what not to say, what to do and what not to do. You know, it's really about honoring that life and that they are unique, precious life, just like each one of us on earth are and in heaven. And so this precious life is valuable and treasured and loved, and the parents will never forget. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether your life goes spinning on at Mach speed, their life still will always have a point of remembrance and they'll always be missing the baby. I always miss Grace. Mm-hmm. I'm not crying every day. I'm not miserable every day. I laugh. I have fun. I'm in a much better place in my grief all these years down. But you know, in the initial stages, I was really raw. And you know, my conversations looked different. I needed someone to hear my story, to listen, to ask how I'm doing, you know, to see what they could do to be of help. Now the conversation looks different. But always ask the person how they're doing. Always try to find a way to see how you can, you know, insert yourself in a way that's loving. A lot of times silence is very valuable. Yes. So the listening is the most important part. A lot of times we want to say, and the person didn't want to hear what you had to say. And so it's better to just say, can I just listen? I would just love to hear how you're doing. I'd love to hear about their story. What's going on for you guys right now? How can we pray for you? To just say we miss them. Mm-hmm. Also, we're so sad they're not here. I steer people away from the word sorry. Because it's trivialized. I give an example in the book, but when I was in the hospital helping grieving parents at the time their baby died, I was doing photography and videography and helping be a doula and plan their service. And I did this for 10 years. And I saw the scene replay over and over. The nurse would come in and say, I'm so sorry. The doctor would come in and say, I'm so sorry. The social worker come in, I'm so sorry, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody said, I'm sorry. And at one point, when everyone left the room, it was just me and the mom, she screamed and she goes, if one more person says they're sorry, I'm going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. She goes, I don't want to be pitied. And I already feel terrible, but it just doesn't even seem like like they care. There just seems like they're repeating something just to say something. So try to be unique in how you say sorry. Mm. Like, you know, I'm sad. This is very sad. This is an intense grief. This is so hard. I can't, I know you're hurting and I'm hurting with you. And this is a great loss. And, and sometimes just holding someone's hand and just looking in their eyes and meaning your touch, just being very intentional with your hug, being very intentional with, your smile. Sometimes I just sit and I weep with people. Mm-hmm. Jesus wept with people. I don't have words. Yeah. There is nothing I can say in this situation that will make them feel better. And so I just weep with them. Mm-hmm. And I also follow their lead. So if we're really good at looking at people and seeing their eyes and seeing their body and how they're responding to us, you can really pick up on what might be good to say and not good to say, and always consult the Holy Spirit because he's such a good teacher and guide. Mm-hmm. And I've had supernatural conversations with people that have been life-giving and it had nothing to do with me. Yeah. Like I was just a vessel and mm-hmm. literally the Holy Spirit gave me a word for a person in the moment. And it was amazing. Like the people had said to me, I have goosebumps all over. You said exactly what I was needing to hear. I feel like God came and just gave me that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's our God. That's mm-hmm. how good he is.
It's funny. In the book, you say that week, and I'm trying to make light of this because it's a serious topic, but it's hard for a male in real estate talk serious for 30 minutes. We have to inject a little bit of humor. Lasagna. You ate a lot of lasagna that week, didn't you?
I did.
So be a little creative with the food, everybody. Call up Candy. Yes. And say, hey, Candy, what do you want to eat? A little pork roast, maybe? We'll throw some meatballs or something. You know, let's be a little creative on that.
They have apps now with meal trains. Yeah, in the book, you'll see, I literally, all these people just kept bringing me big pans of lasagna. Yes. We're left to put them. I was like, oh, thank you at the door. I was like, and my husband would go, it's lasagna again. I mean, we're not even Italian for goodness
sake. I know, Mick Vicker. I know I'm married to an Irish woman. I can see that. If you maybe shepherd's pie, I guess.
Shepherd's pie. Come on. Something different.
I agree, but it can be difficult. We were talking about my situation and we had our ectopic pregnancy. And what is the difference when our baby wasn't even formed? Our baby was very, very early stages. And I still haven't even been able to process that whole entire journey, as opposed to what you told me. Sometimes it's better to have the baby come full term. So at least you can connect with the baby. And you once the baby's born, take pictures, touch the baby and have that experience where I don't want to say I was robbed of that experience, but it's still hard for me to internalize after all these years where I'm trying to conceptualize it. And like you said, I have more of a logical brain. I don't have that emotional connection and it's a difficult thing. So can you touch on that real quick for us?
Well, the early loss of an ectopic where the baby develops in the fallopian tube and or outside the tube, sometimes it happens and they're not inside the uterus. These mm-hmm. babies don't survive. And And there's also molar pregnancies where it begins to develop, but something goes wrong and the baby is not going to thrive, and it starts to go backwards. You know, it doesn't have the growth you see it. And it's more like, it's considered like a cancerous pregnancy. And then there's, of course, early miscarriage, and all of those, you typically are not going to see a baby. There are some women who, you know, they labor at home and they will see like a small being of a baby that they can tell the formation and see it. But most of the time, it's a very traumatic thing because there's all the labor or all the pain, and there's this process happening that you can't stop. And it's very scary, and you don't know, you're afraid about your health. You're afraid, especially for the male, he's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to lose my wife in this process. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a very scary part to go through, and all the unknowns. And then again, not being able to see them or hold them adds additional trauma. One thing I highly encourage is, you know, ask for an ultrasound picture of the baby while you have a chance to. Whenever that heartbeat shows up, get that, because that's a very significant, you know, piece of memory that you get to carry on in your future with you. Frame that, and you get to have that. Mm-hmm. But I've been able to walk people through a lot of healing who had early loss, because, you know, something, for example, rituals are important, and doing something rather than nothing is good. And many people, they say, you know, I didn't name the baby yet, but I say, well, just go into your prayer closet and ask the Lord for the name, because I believe they have a name in heaven. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's going to say what he puts on your heart is a bad name. So pray for a name and name your baby, because that will allow you opportunities to honor them later in life. Some people say baby B, baby C, baby D, you know, especially a loss of multiples, but mm-hmm. most of the time people will, you know, or they'll say baby Smith, you know, and everybody knows if there was only one, that's the, you know, the baby. But I really believe giving a first name and giving that baby a name and having a moment of some type of, you know, commitment to them of honoring their life is very precious. So for example, I told this gal, I said, you know, you guys can both poke your fingers and put your blood on a, you have your fingerprint, which, you know, is unique to you, but your DNA is shared by that child. And you put that on a piece of paper, write a love note to them. And each of you can take a clipping of your hair and put that in, and you can either do a burial ceremony because you didn't get to have a proper burial, or you can have a cremation of that, or you can have, you know, that set somewhere in a special curio cabinet of something. But to just to have some type of closure and some type of, we loved you, we wanted you, and we anticipate you, and we care about you, and we'll never forget you. And you'll always have a place in our heart to have something around that. Is actually going to take people much further in their grief. People who don't grieve, people who deny and try to say, I don't want to deal with that, it's too hard. Unresolved grief will always come knocking at your door. And I've watched it over and over through the years. People who do not deal with their grief and their pain, they end up being addicts. They end up having, you know, affairs. They end up being turning to pornography. They end up going into very unhealthy eating patterns. They end up becoming workaholics or aholics of some kind. Mm-hmm. This grief undealt with finds a way to mm-hmm. be, you know, addressed. And so I really believe that we can become stronger individuals, stronger couples, if we say, let's face this head on. Let's mm-hmm. look at this together. Let's do this. And you can do it in moments and in spurts, or you can do it very intensely. Some people go on a grief retreat and they're mm-hmm. just like, we are going to just lay it all out there, and we're going to process, and we're going to journal, and we're going to pray, and we're going to, you know, but you'll always miss your baby. So for the grieving parent, that's a forever grief, but it's not going to be the dark, deep, sad stuff where you don't have joy in life.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not what happens. You are going to have still joy in life. You're going to still have good days. You're going to still laugh and have fun. And that's okay. And you should give yourself permission to have normalcy.
Candy, how do you get stubborn men like myself, let's say, who don't want to become part of the grieving process. I'm throwing myself under the bus because okay. Now I would never have an issue with doing it. Maybe when I was early on, when we first got married, when first or second child, I probably would have been hesitant towards it. Like you said, compartmentalize it and say, I need to get on and I need to provide for you. How do you get the woman to let, because we have to think it's our idea, obviously. Yeah. So how do you get Juliet to trick Gino into saying it's a great idea? And Gino going, you know, Juliet, I think we should do this. How does that work? How do you do that?
Well, it's kind of like Dr. Chapman says, don't give a man a book to read, give him a chapter to read. It's all about small pieces and doing it in the right timing. God is really good about timing, right? So we need to be good about timing. There's a specific timing for everything. And, you get them at their good moments. You get them at the point of connection. You really work on loving him well, the way he wants to be loved. And, you know, everybody has a tender heart somewhere. I know you have a little bit of a teddy bear tender heart in you somewhere. Yeah. So you're going to touch on that piece because, you know, when she puts it in like a parable style, like Jesus did, like if we say it to a man in a way he gets it. So really pray about how can I address this and say it in a way he understands. So say it to him in a way where he, you know, he's relating to his other kids or his situation, or, you know, would you deny our other daughter? Right. You know, just, I'm sorry, I can't show up at the wedding. I can't do it. You know, I can't be there for you during this. I know it's really important, but you know, like I need you to be here and present for me in this situation for this child. And because you have six daughters, I would assume this is a seventh daughter. You know, maybe it was the son. I don't know, but
we do have one son, five girls. Oh, five, yes. Okay,
that's so okay. It feels like
we have six daughters sometimes.
He's very outnumbered.
Yes. So, you're telling me to dumb it down, basically dumb it down for the men because we need to have it. I need to have it dumbed down sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You mentioned children, other children. And we talked about, again, we talked about this before the show, but we as parents always think it's all about us. We're grieving or the loss of a child or, you know, and it's their grieving too. They're missing out on a sibling. And we don't really think about it much, to be honest. We kind of just like mom and dad need time. We need to do this, this, and the other thing, but they are missing out on something that a relationship that they don't get to have their whole life. And it's when I see my girls playing, sometimes I do think about that, but I for me, tell me what, you know, I want to know your advice and what you think about this, but we openly talk about it more recently than before. We feel like we didn't talk about it for a few years, but it was my oldest daughter that started to talk about it and to talk about who that person was. And, you know, I mentioned she made me a beautiful little picture. She painted a little thing of we're all little snowmen, and she added that baby in number seven in there. And I just was like, wow, that really meant a lot because the kids acknowledged that person. And I thought that was beautiful and it was healing for them. So what advice do you have?
Well, the kids are grieving. So whether you want to acknowledge that or not, it's happening and they're watching you and observing you process. Okay. So they're learning, how do we do grief? Okay. This is like really big and billboard style in their mind. Like it's huge because they're taking it all in mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and seeing how is mom and dad grieving? Do they talk about it? Do they process with us? Do they include us in the process? Do they let us see their struggle? Mm-hmm. Do we do it as a family or are we left to do it on our own? Typical things that happen especially when you have the baby developing and they see the baby growing or the baby's already been here and they've held the baby. Anytime you have the further along process, the more they got involved, the more they got expectant, the more excited they got. And so you're going to have a lot of different trauma stages for these children and also depending on their ages. So what I found with the younger kids is they're very accepting. Well, they went to be with Jesus and they weren't well and they had to go and they're like, oh, they went to be with Jesus and they hold their teddy bear and they hug it and they seem to accept that it's okay. Yeah. as you get a little bit older and all the way into teens and older, mm-hmm. their process of emotion looks real different. They can become very angry. You can have a child who all of a sudden is hitting and lashing out, and they're not doing school, and they're very, like they all of a sudden become an ADD kid. Like they just aren't focused. They're not sleeping well. They have night terrors. They wet the bed. They are, you know, they can have all kinds of an array of emotions like mm-hmm. that, all the way to they're kind of rebelling, or they're kind of acting, you know, they test out the waters and swear, or they start to be kind of, you know, rude, or mm-hmm. it can really cover a lot of different emotions. And, you know, and some are, they can become extremely fearful, anxious yeah. because they're afraid if they could die, maybe I'm going to die mm-hmm. or my parents are going to die. Yeah. And so they become really afraid. There's, you know, children I've seen because the mom and dad said, well, the, you know, baby brother didn't come home with us from the hospital. He didn't make it. And every time they'd pass the hospital, they thought their baby brother was stuck there and they never understood it.
Yeah.
So it's also very important. We say things in a way that, do they understand? Yeah. Do they really get what we're saying? And then when in one family story, they shared when we went to deliver our next baby, they were so afraid because that's the place where the babies go and die. And yeah. so they just thought this is another baby they have to take to leave there. And they're like, no, you know, and so the parents had to, they didn't realize that's what the child had internalized. Mm-hmm. And so processing with our children is really important. Talking it through, really understanding where they're at, giving them outlets to honor their baby brother and sister. So like my children never met Grace. And they never met our next baby that died too. We had a 15-week miscarriage we named Promise, and they were both alive at that point. So they have two siblings on either spectrum, and they put them in every picture we take, to like anything they draw, the babies are both included. And if I ever say to anyone, like anyone in the public who says, so how many children do you have? If I say two, they will stop me and correct me in public and say, we have four.
That's so beautiful.
So they're yeah. very like, mom, or, and I'm like, I'm sorry. And maybe I didn't feel like sharing it with the Home Depot.
Yes. Guy, you
know? And so I'm like, we have two, and the guy, and I'm like, it's Home Depot. Okay. So, anyway, but they'll correct me. And so I'm very aware that I want to be honoring of their journey, and I want to be respectful of what their needs are. But let me give you a couple quick things. There's something called sand tray, sand play therapy. It is fabulous. We've seen awesome results with it. Basically, the therapist is trained with this whole line of how you counsel kids, especially, but they have a room full of all kinds of figurines, and you set up a scene of something you're dealing with, and then you resolve the scene, and they take pictures of your beginning scenes and your end scenes, and you're able to be hands-on with something. And so the dragon could be the big scary thing you're afraid of, and maybe you're living through, you're the bunny rabbit in the story, or whatever, however you set up your scene. But it really very effective, as well as music therapy, art therapy, equine therapy, getting kids on a horse, helping them to have outlets, and, you know, and doing fun stuff as a family. Like we go and we do something, and today's a day, if we would have had Grace here, we would have done something fun for her birthday. So we're going to do something fun together, and they get to help pick. What do we do for the birthday this year? What do we get? How are we decorating? What kind of food are we getting? And they're part of the planning and the fun. And so get them included and do it as a family.
I love that. That's Candy, you're in for a treat today, because since it's the Julia and Gino show, Julia is going to do her first recap.
Oh, I'm going to recap.
Yes.
Oh, but you're so good at it. I actually look forward to your recaps.
I'm going to push you off.
You know, I just want to first say, Candy, that you give so much great advice, and we do all go through some difficult moments in our life. And I know God puts us in those moments for a reason. And I know, you know, you are helping so many people out there. And I just am so thankful for that. I didn't realize it until I finished your book. I'm like, wow, you know, I always thought that, what was that show that we used to watch years and years ago with, was it American Most Wanted? Something like that, where the man lost his little boy.
Oh, yeah.
And he put on this whole show. It was on every Sunday night of catching bad guys, basically. And he did it all in the name of his son who was taken. And I always used to think, I'm like, my poor man, but look what he's doing. Look what God put him in the world to help so many people. And I'm just, you know, as difficult as life can be, we are put in moments for a reason. And we can see the beauty in them if we really look and we trust that God has a plan for us. So I just want to thank you for that, because that's incredible. You know, you've gone through so much, but look what's came out of it. It's beautiful.
Candy, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
CandyMcVicar.com and CandyMcVicar.com. And then also that links to our foundation's website, which is missinggrace.org, but it's on our website. And our foundation is available to help people through the grief process. We have support groups. We mail resources out to individuals in hospitals. And we do grief events that are memorial events to honor our babies and to celebrate their life and to support one another. And so, and Grace is our daughter that died, but it's also the acronym of our foundation, which stands for Grieve, Restore, Arise, Commemorate, and Educate. And so we would be honored if you would call us up and we'll help you out through the journey and help you as we can.
That's beautiful. Any last final words, message that you want the listeners to know?
You know, even though times can look difficult, there's always throughout history challenges in life, right? We go throughout life and we will have trials and tribulations. There will be difficulties. And you know, if you're a person who has had the difficulty of a grief experience, you have lost a baby or a child, I just want you to know you're not alone. And there's a whole lot of people out there ahead of you in the journey who would love to be there to support you and love you through the journey. And there is hope. And I do believe that you can use your story for something beautiful. I believe God gives beauty for ashes, and he is a gracious God. And whatever the enemy stole from us or meant for evil, God is a very redemptive God, and he gives recompense. And he is so good at doing something to really make our story beautiful. And there's always good that can come out of something terrible. And if you are willing to brave that and be courageous, I'd encourage you to try, because your story is going to help someone else.
Yeah. For anyone out there, this makes a great gift for if you know somebody who's grieving. This is an excellent gift, an excellent resource. This is probably better than a tray of lasagna, I'd have to say. So, or shepherd's pie. So get the book. I love it. CandyMcVicar.com.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank all the listeners for being on the Julia and Gino show. Until next time.
He'll be the Gino. We'll see. You'll all listen to the next show.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thanks, Candy.